unfiltered, uncensored. Ready to take on the issues the mainstream media is afraid to engage in. Bringing you the hard-hitting truth. This is the Mass Resistance Radio Program. On Boston's 1330 WRCA. Now, your host and voice of the Mass Resistance Movement, Brian Kamiker.
Hello, everyone. This is Brian Kamiker, and you are listening to Radio Free Massachusetts, Mass Resistance Radio, broadcast on WRCA, 1330 AM, on your dial out of Cambridge and Boston. And you will hear things that you will not hear certainly not from the mainstream media, not really from much other media. But we're here to keep you informed from Mass Resistance. Go to our website, massresistance.org, and our blog, massresistance.net. I'm here with Amy.
This is Amy.
And we've got this is going to be a disturbing show, ladies and gentlemen. I'm going to tell you right up front.
Another R rating.
Another R rating at best. But what's going on is what's going on, and you're just not going to hear it anywhere else. But this is very disturbing. Before we get into things, we're going to be talking also with Peter LaBarbera of Americans for Truth later on in the show on issues nationally, and also Pastor Kevin Thompson, who is running for Congress in the 5th District for the Constitution Party. And that's going to be very interesting. I also want people to know on October 3rd, there is a forum at Acton-Boxborough Regional High School that Mass Resistance is helping put on the homosexual play The Laramie Project. This is a forum for the city, or for the town of Acton and Boxborough and others. Anybody can come to talk about. This is a very, very destructive play that has been on in high schools around the country and colleges, and also in Massachusetts.
It's a propaganda masterpiece.
And you will see some very, very interesting speakers. More on that next week. Also, our Mass Resistance Banquet on the 5th.
No, the 4th. Thursday, October 4th.
Thursday, October 4th at the Holiday Inn in Boxborough with Scott Lively. That's going to be really good. More on that on our Mass Resistance website. But okay, let's go.
Well, the disturbing part of the show, it's not our fault. It's disturbing. It's the fault of the lobby that has filed this legislation, the Transgender Rights and Hate Crimes Bill, House Number 1722.
Yeah, last week, and you can hear the program on the website massresistance.org. We had part one of this discussion of what this bill is, and we talked
primarily about health issues and how it would ban discrimination relating to anything, health funding, healthcare funding, and we're going to continue a bit on that subject in a minute. But first of all, you got to tell people that's the phrase that's in this bill is gender identity or expression. One can no longer discriminate on the basis of gender identity or expression if this bill is passed.
Now, this is a bill in the Massachusetts legislature. They've already had their transgender lobby day.
Mm-hmm.
It's in the Judiciary Committee, and they're at some point, probably later this year, going to have a public hearing on it. And this is a bill that is the next step in the homosexual movement.
The activists are, as we speak, telling their sob stories to legislators. There's a big campaign on to do that. So, they're going in and saying, I lost my job. This is a male who's decided to grow breasts or have them implanted or whatever and dress as a woman, lost his job, and that's they want to make that illegal discrimination. Well,
even in the public schools.
Everywhere. Exemption for any religious institution, church, or a person of strong religious beliefs.
And more than that, to make it a hate crime to criticize this behavior.
That's right. This is also happening at the federal level, of course, with the ENDA, the Employment Non-Discrimination Act. It's really quite disturbing. So they're trying it both at state levels and at the federal level. What's really interesting to me about this bill They've already gotten on the books that we can't discriminate on the basis of sexual orientation, but guess what? They never define sexual orientation. So that's going to come back to bite us at some point. And here's another phrase they're trying to inject into our statutes. Gender, identity, or expression. Very interesting. This is really not defined. In the bill, they have a non-definition definition, which is really laughable. I'll read what the definition is that they've embedded in the bill. The term gender, identity, or expression shall mean a gender-related identity, appearance, expression, or behavior of an individual, regardless of the individual's assigned sex at birth.
Assigned sex at birth.
So that's so. Yeah, I mean, there's this whole, you know, conflict between the words sex, you know, and gender, but they never really define gender. They say gender is gender. You know, it's absurd. But they're also implying that one's sex is assigned by a medical observer or a parent and not a biological fact. Now, there are very, very, very few actual hermaphrodites or intersex individuals. It's a very, very rare condition. But they're trying to basically play on that to get sympathy.
Yeah. I mean, statistically speaking, there is nobody who is not a male or a female and will always be that genetically and biologically, no matter what mutilations they do to their body.
Now, in their own literature, the transgender activists admit that they want to leave this definition very open to allow for yet unknown directions that they'd like to move in. Well, you know, use your brain and figure out what that means. I mean, any kind of bizarre behavior in the world that somebody could cook up is going to be covered by this bill because it's really not defined, as is also true of the phrase sexual orientation. So, you know, get ready if this is passed. One of the things that's interesting, the Transgender Law Center, it's a national group.
The Transgender Law Center.
Yeah, and Traditional Values Coalition has a great report on this whole issue. According to the Transgender Law Center, they say that the definition includes males or females who identify as the opposite sex but do not plan on undergoing sex change operations. In essence, a person can simply claim he's the opposite sex, and according to the Transgender Law Center, they're then entitled to use opposite sex restrooms or make all these other demands as transgender people. This same Transgender Law Center also defines the word transition to mean the steps that some transgender people take to express their gender identity. Transition can be as simple as adopting a new name and wearing clothes that are more stereotypically male or female.
So transition is this moving from being a male to a female or a female to a male or something like
that. Well, but it could be as simple as just saying, okay, my name is not John anymore, it's Julie. And then you're transgender in the eyes of the law, because it's not really defined in the law.
And you know, you see pictures of these people.
So what does this mean? This means that John, who doesn't even wear women's clothes, but identifies himself as Julie just in name, is now transgender. Therefore, John gets to come use the women's restroom. This is in their own literature that they're admitting this. It's not that we're making this up. So we will be talking in the next segment more about this whole issue of public facilities, especially focusing on toilets. Now, why are we focusing on toilets? Because they're focusing on toilets. That's one of their big, big focuses. But if we have another couple of minutes, there were a few more things we were going to say about the health issue. We came across a few more things related to transgender prostitutes.
Yeah, we talked about that last week.
Now, when you're thinking about the health issues, one thing we didn't go into this, very, very high levels of HIV/AIDS in transgender prostitute population. And I rediscovered an article from the Boston Globe back in October of 2002, and it's on this issue. It's talking about how HIV needs to be fought by reaching out to the transgender prostitute.
Well, let's talk a second. Okay.
Yeah. What do you think it is, Brian? Well, what is a transgender prostitute?
Essentially, what it is a man who takes some steps to become a woman, or think he's a woman, or maybe has mutilations to the body, and then goes out as if he were a woman seeking sex on the street.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, there's this whole, you know, raft of emotional and psychological issues that would cause a man to do this.
Okay, but what we're going to focus on here is not so much what they look like. You know, it's basically, they often call these people she-males, meaning it's a male body with breasts and dressed as a woman with a woman's makeup. But, and in fact, if you want to get a look at some of these people, just pick up the local Boston Phoenix and you'll see graphic advertisements that some of these people put in the paper with their measurements. It's really quite frightening. And kids can pick those up in convenience stores, the Boston Phoenixes, oh, yeah, with the ads. It's really awful. But getting back to why this is really dangerous, if this bill passes, this is essentially the state sanctioning this sort of behavior and saying we can't discriminate against these people. We have to give them everything they need for their health care and blah, blah, blah. But at the same time, they've got exceedingly high rates of HIV. They've got estimated 30% of transgender prostitutes are HIV positive, with rates even higher among adolescent transgender prostitutes.
Oh, adolescent.
This is in the Boston Globe article from October of 2002. Now compare that to men who have sex with men. Back in 2002, about 3% were HIV positive, and about 14% of white men, and about 14% of African American men are HIV positive, men who have sex with men, according to this Boston Globe article. So in the transgender prostitute world, it's much, much higher than that. So do we really want the state saying, yeah, transgender behavior is perfectly fine, nothing wrong with it?
And it is, you know, a documented you know, mental health problem. It's a documented, you know, mental illness.
And they do even admit back in 2002 in the Boston Globe article that these are very, very disturbed people who take part in these behaviors. But another thing I came across that was quite interesting, the HIV positive person who is taking hormone supplements is very dangerous to mix those two, HIV drugs and hormone supplements. It can cause liver damage, according to the doctor interviewed in the Boston Globe article. So here we are encouraging people to go ahead and be transgender, have hormone treatments, and many of these people have HIV drugs at the same time. No one really knows even what the long-term effect of these hormone injections are, the opposite sex hormone injections.
Yeah,
10 years out, 20 years out, 30 years out, what's the effect of that going to be? I remember on the ABC 2020 show where they were trying to convince us that little children could be transgender, there was a brief mention that a boy who was getting female hormones from the time he was a young boy would be more likely to have breast cancer when he grew up.
Wow.
But, you know, is anyone talking about that? No.
The idea that they are trying to use medical science to mutilate people's bodies in this way, in such a drastic manner, not only externally but internally through hormones and everything else, mm-hmm. it's very, very frightening stuff. To help a mental illness, you know, seek its own path. It's unbelievable, the power of this movement.
The question is, why would our state want to sanction these behaviors on the street? And whatever happened to the concept of public health?
It's insane.
That's why we had sodomy laws on the books. Partly it was a public health concern. It wasn't just a moral concern.
Well, this, you know,
it's all going out the window.
This is what happens when, you know, people don't pay attention to these kinds of issues. I mean, society turns itself inside out. And ladies and gentlemen, this is just the beginning. And we've got a lot more to talk about on this. A lot more. Let's take just a real quick break, and we'll be right back. Brian Kamenker, Mass Resistance Radio. We'll be back. And we're back. Brian Kamenker, Mass Resistance Radio. And we were talking about a rather disturbing subject, but it's unfortunately we have to talk about it.
Because it's at the State House in bill form. So if it can be in the bill, what we're doing basically...
It will be state law.
Yeah. And we're basically fleshing out, to use maybe an unfortunate term there, we're fleshing out what this bill really will mean in everyday life. We were talking about health in the previous segment, specifically transgender prostitutes. Now we're moving on to toilets, Brian, and I'm sorry, but I'm not the one with the pee and poo obsession. But apparently the people who have put this bill together have a real issue with public toilets. So we need to talk about public toilets. It's going to be covered in the bill under the public accommodations section. No discrimination in any public accommodation. We'll get to the rest of the public accommodations later, but today we're just going to focus on toilets. Let's see. The Mass Transgender Political Coalition actually had a seminar last spring. Do you remember the toilet training seminar?
The toilet training.
That's what they called it, the toilet training seminar for their activists. And we are going to be reading from a report from our favorite group in Washington, the Traditional Values Coalition. They have a report on the report put out by the trans activists called Peeing in Peace. See, we're using their words. The activists
are calling it this.
We're not calling it this, but this is what they've come down to, you know? All we deal with is excrement these days. But anyhow, before we get to that, I have to tell you a personal experience I had, and I'm having more and more of these. I was in New York City last year sometime, and one of my favorite places to go is the Frick Museum. Again, it seems to be unfortunately named, but it's a great museum. It's a very serene place with my very favorite collection of art. I love to go there because it's like an island of sanity in the city, and you can sort of take a breather and just hang out for a couple of hours. Well, I had to use the restroom. So I'm in this long line in the women's restroom, always a long line. I'd like to see the legislature do something about that. No, just kidding. And who should get in line behind me but a 6'4" man in the women's restroom, dressed as a woman, but clearly a man. You know, so I'm standing
Adam's
there.
Adam's apple.
Everything, you know. I'm standing there in line just waiting and waiting, and there's this guy behind me. I'm sorry, but I was uncomfortable. Well, soon that will be a hate crime to be uncomfortable in such a situation. But, you know, it's happening all over the place. I don't know. And it's going to happen more, and no one can stop it. No one can complain. The interesting thing is, according to their own documents, who is a transgender? Whoever thinks he's a transgender, or, you know, if it's a man that's decided just to use a woman's name, he doesn't even have to be dressed in women's clothing or with fake breasts to go into the women's room. He could just go into the women's room if this bill is passed. So this is a very disturbing document when you read Peeing in Peace from the Transgender Law Center.
Yeah, we'll put that up.
Well,
is it up on your blog?
Not yet. The Traditional Values Coalition for now, traditionalvalues.org, they have a good report called Summary of Transgender Law Center Report called Peeing in Peace. It's a resource guide for transgender activists and their allies. Now, this document, Peeing in Peace, was funded in part by a grant from the Kicking Assets Fund of the Tides Foundation, which is partly funded by Teresa Carey, wife of Senator John Kerry. So some of her Heinz money is going to fund such things as this Peeing in Peace report. Okay, this is, I mean, it's just too much. There's another, they also refer people to, this is interesting, the Gay Straight Alliance Network as one of their allies. For anyone who's in search of safe restrooms.
Again, what is this group that's doing all of this, that's pushing...
all of the transgender activists are very, very concerned about the toilet issue.
Okay, continue.
So this is the Transgender Law Center's report that we're talking to. Now, the Transgender Law Center, they are sending people on to the Gay Straight Alliance Network. The Gay Straight Alliance is all those clubs in our schools. So you know they're pushing this stuff big time in the high schools across America, not just in Massachusetts. Then there is a group called the PISS, I hesitate to say that, and Vinegar Zine, meaning a web magazine, published by the Anti-Capitalist Tranny Brigade. Okay, that's one of their groups. And another group behind this, People in Search of Safe Restrooms. Figure out that acronym for yourself, PISSR. Now, I call this juvenile. I'm sorry, this focus on pee and poo and playing with all these words. You know, shouldn't people get over this by the age of seven or
you're
eight?
Right. I mean, the larger homosexual movement seems to be immersed in juvenile stuff from top to bottom and side to side. You know, the parades are often more often than not juvenile oriented. The juvenile costumes, the focus on kids, the incredible focus on kids in the public schools. It's like people who never really had a childhood or something.
Something's odd here. So in the Peeing in Peace resource guide, the group behind it claims that segregating men and women in different bathrooms is akin to racial segregation before the civil rights movement. You see, again, that they don't want to recognize that God made people either male or female.
Yeah.
To have a male bathroom and a female bathroom, that's like racial segregation? Come on.
But that is what is going to be pushed in the state legislature. And, you know, a lot of our state legislators are stupid enough to believe that, especially if there's nobody saying the opposite.
Well, remember, there's also the anti-capitalist tranny brigade involved here. And they probably are behind this section in the Peeing in Peace report. There's a section called Historical Bathroom Activism. Bathrooms have long been a place where people with authority, power, or wealth have denied access to other people. Over 150 years ago, only wealthy people could afford bathrooms in their homes, and poor people were forced to use insufficient, non-hygienic public toilets. So there's even historical bathroom discrimination that goes way back. So it's, you know, you got to remember the anti-capitalist angle to this. And I'm sure that Queer Today will have something posted about that soon, you know. Okay. Now, remember, this is going to apply not only to business bathrooms, public place bathrooms, you know, museums. It's going to apply in the schools. They actually have a section in this transgender rights bill here in Massachusetts, H-1722, which gives single-sex health clubs, well, I should say denies single-sex health clubs any ability to say no to a transgendered individual. So it's not just the toilet stall, but it's going to be the showers in a health club. They have to admit transgenders. Even if it's a women's health club, guy wants to come in, the guy's got breasts and his male organs, and he wants to take a shower, can't stop him. This is in the transgender rights bill, okay? Now, getting back to peeing in peace, they're denying that there's any reason people should be afraid, you know, that a woman should be upset at the thought of a man coming into a woman's bathroom. But let me tell you, I disagree with that for many reasons. First of all, these people, I'm pretty sure, are a little bit mentally unstable, or they wouldn't be doing this tranny thing
severely
to begin with.
So, I would say.
I mean, they're still in the diagnostic manual of the psychiatric profession. But let's say I've read a lot about these people who say they start out as a male and then they claim they're a female. But once they become a female, they claim they're still interested in women, and therefore they identify themselves as a lesbian. Okay, so it's a man who now says he's a woman saying he's a lesbian. So we've got these trans women, as they call them, that's a male-to-female transsexual or transgender person, using a woman's restroom. He's a man, really. He's still interested in women, by his own admission, except now he calls himself a lesbian. Well, I'm sorry, if I've got a guy in there that's still interested in women, and he's still got his male organ, and he's in the women's restroom, to me that seems like a threat.
It's lunacy.
It's
is what it
insanity.
Is. Yeah.
Okay, now, the Peeing in Peace document provides transgendered individuals with several ways of dealing with the challenges they face in using opposite-sex restrooms. Those who confront a cross-dresser or transsexual who is using an opposite bathroom are described as the people who are confused, angry, or afraid.
Yeah, we're the ones who are confused, angry,
yeah,
and afraid.
Yeah, we're the ones. So if we have a negative reaction, I was very uncomfortable when that guy was behind me in the Frick Museum bathroom. I'm the one who's confused, angry.
This is Orwellian.
And I'm transphobic. That's the new word you're going to hear a lot, transphobic. So now the trans activists are encouraging other transgenders to take a fellow cross-dresser or a drag queen into the restroom with them. That's what they call the buddy system, so they can protect each other. So now, not only do we have one guy coming into the women's restroom, we're going to have a couple of them coming in together. So they can intimidate me, right? And I'm not allowed to be afraid because I would be transphobic and guilty of a hate crime.
Under law.
So anyhow, that's one thing. There are also, there's sort of a conflict within the trans movement, I gather. Some are saying we have to have gender-neutral bathrooms. Like, you know, you see a lot of those at the airport where it's either male or female. And it's just a single stall, single person bathroom. But, you know, some of the trans people don't like that. They want to really go for it and force women to allow men to come in and vice versa. So I don't know. There's a bit of a conflict there within the movement, as far as I can tell. Now, the other thing transgender law is doing, they're urging individuals to target individual bathrooms in their communities. There's a nationwide campaign on. And if you ever wondered why you go into Starbucks and there's two gender-neutral toilet stalls now, well, that's why. You know, I mean, they're targeting businesses and saying it's not right to have a male symbol or a female symbol on the restroom door because that's transphobic. Okay, so this is happening. It's going to continue to get worse. There's a Safe Bathroom grassroots organization across the country now. Yeah, I mean, they're the ones that are concerned about their safety, they say.
A Safe Bathroom
grassroots. So you got to watch out for them.
What about us?
Exactly. Well, that doesn't seem to bother these people. We're the ones with the problem, not them. So it's going to cost businesses an awful lot of money to put in these gender-neutral bathrooms if they have to do that. But
the money aside, it's lunacy.
Oh, sure. But I'm just speaking to the fiscal conservatives here. You know, we got a lot of people out there who aren't at all bothered by the fact that, you know, people are denying their God-given sex. I mean, we got a lot of fiscal conservatives who are only going to be bothered by the bottom line,
yeah,
that they have to change their facilities in their building. That's going to cost them a lot. Okay, you fiscal conservatives who don't care about moral issues, maybe you should get a little upset about the money. Yeah. That's why I brought that up. We got a lot of people like that around. A lot of business people.
Yeah. Well,
that look only at the money issues. So anyhow, this is definitely in the bill, and it's interesting. There have been stories in the press. You see them mostly in the Bay Windows gay newspaper or the In News Weekly gay newspaper here in Massachusetts about the health clubs, and there have been a lot of men trying to be women who are trying to access women's health clubs, and there have been stories about that. Well, this bill will specifically force all single-sex health clubs to allow these people into the facilities.
Wow.
I don't know how any legislator in his or her right mind could let this pass.
But this is only touching
the surface of the public accommodations bill, Brian. This is only the bathrooms we're talking about.
If you look at the list of co-sponsors of this bill,
I know
it is enormous. And the problem is that people are just sitting there. They're not doing anything. And unless they do, this will happen.
So the Mass Transgender Political Coalition sums it up this way. All that matters, well, these are my words. I'll introduce it by saying all that matters is how an individual identifies or expresses him or herself. It doesn't matter whether I see a man standing there in the women's restroom. Okay. All that matters is how that person identifies or expresses himself. So Mass Transgender Political Coalition says this: allowing individuals to use the restroom that corresponds with the gender identity that they publicly and exclusively assert or express makes sense. There's simply no legitimate way to do anatomy checks or chromosomal checks before determining who can use what restroom.
It's lunacy. I
mean, it is lunacy.
A person will always have the same DNA no matter what hormones or drugs or mutilations they do to their body. They are always what they are.
So anyone who objects, according to this Mass Transgender Political Coalition, is guilty of bias and prejudice.
Wow. People need to get involved. This is going to happen. You know, nobody thought the stuff that's happening is what happened.
Well, next time we'll talk about other aspects of the public accommodations statute that are going to be affected by this, such as hotels, business, well, actually, public accommodations, as defined in the Mass law, is incredibly wide-reaching. It basically is any place outside of your home.
Yeah.
We'll get to that next time.
But, you know, in the meantime, you need to get involved with Mass Resistance. You know, get on our email list. Get, you know, become active. Ladies and gentlemen, you know, you've got to do something. You really do. This is going to happen. And you know, this is just the tip of the iceberg. There are some other bills, too, which we're going to be getting into in some of our shows. the assault on Massachusetts by these radical bizarre movements is only beginning, and they see us ripe after all this homosexual marriage stuff. Okay, well let's take a quick break. We're going to switch gears a little bit. This is Brian Kamenker. We'll be right back. And we're back. This is Brian Kamenker, Mass Resistance Radio, here on WRCA, Cambridge, Boston. Well, from time to time, we want to look at the national scene of what's going on in, you know, the movement, so to speak, and, you know, other things. We've got Pete LaBarbera of Americans for Truth, AmericansForTruth.com, who, Pete, thanks for coming on the show. What's on the national scene is going on that people ought to know here?
Well, there's so much going on. We sent a reporter, Allison Smith, to the National Lesbian and Gay Journalists Association, which is a homosexual journalist outfit, and these people have a big role in deciding what's reported on homosexual news and homosexual related news. And as you can imagine, they generally, I think, push the news in a pro-homosexual direction. Now, we should add a caveat. There's also a lot of straight reporters that are doing the same thing, because these days I'm finding that liberal straight guys are the biggest radical gay activists out there.
That's interesting. Now, getting back to the National Lesbian and Gay Journalists Association, a lot of people have no idea what it is. It's a huge group of journalists throughout the country that has a they have a yearly get-together, a conference.
Annual conference.
A conference.
It's funded by so-called mainstream media companies,
yeah,
including Fox News.
Yeah, and you and I actually were invited to participate back in 2001, and we still got the pictures from there that we need to post on our website. And I can tell you, I was there for 3 days. I went to a lot of the workshops and things like that. It is hardcore, and it is basically strategy sessions on how homosexual journalists can push the homosexual agenda in America's news. And
yeah, they're strategy sessions. The bulk of the people invited are well, actually, most. Allison was probably the only conservative person who didn't agree with homosexuality there. You have partisan homosexual media, but then you have these mainstream journalists. And the problem is everybody's discussing how to advance the gay agenda, and you have these journalists sitting in, and they're getting more of one side of the issue. If it was really, if they really were interested in fair coverage, they would be inviting pro-family and conservative spokesmen every year to get their take, to expose these journalists to our arguments. But as you know, many journalists these days don't even care about our arguments. They've already decided that the homosexual issue is over. It's not really a debate. It's cleanup time. It's just a matter of when, not if, so-called homosexual marriage will be the law of the land in this country.
Right, right. So that took place in San Diego, a couple of weeks ago. Is that right? Okay. Now, you were talking to me. There's something going on that Gary Glenn of AFA in Michigan has been uncovering regarding homosexual journalism and what have you.
Well, yeah, Gary's just put out a good email that we're going to circulate to on our website. And, you know, it's the same thing we've known for years, Brian. You're a specialist in this as well. The incrementalist strategy by which homosexual activism achieves its goals. And it's, you know, we've long heard this story about you put the frog in the pot of water and you turn the heat on and slowly it heats up and people don't notice, and the frog doesn't notice, I'm sorry, until all of a sudden the water's boiling and he's dead, you know. And that analogy is made to our culture. Now, the only problem I have is now it seems like it's very evident everywhere that homosexuality is being promoted. And so it seems like what's happening is many good people are making their own accommodation with this social evil that's in our midst. And we are now even focusing on how Christian leaders are making their accommodation with homosexuality in this culture. Linda Harvey's got a great piece on her website, missionamerica.com, about how some Christian leaders, these are national Christian leaders, are sort of taking this nuanced position on homosexuality. You know, they really are bothered by people like you and me who just take a direct approach and say homosexual behavior is wrong, therefore we will oppose all efforts to mainstream and normalize this behavior. You know, that's too passe for them. They want to find a different position which sort of understands the, quote, complexity of the homosexual issue.
So can you name a few names there, Pete?
Well, Tony Campolo and his wife Peggy Campolo are two big names. Now, Tony's been a left-wing Christian for a long time, but his wife Peggy Campolo is basically a homosexual activist now. She is crusading for so-called homosexual marriage.
Wow.
And it's just appalling to me that I run into Christians all the time who don't know that Peggy Campolo is now an activist for homosexual so-called marriage. And that's very sad.
Well, you know, it's even getting into the political, the conservative political movement. Here in Massachusetts, there is a special congressional election coming up. One of the congressmen left to take a different job. And there is the Republican challenger. Here's a guy with 28 years of military experience. Interestingly, his brother was a pilot of the American Airlines airplane that struck the World Trade Center on September 11th. He was, an Air Force lieutenant colonel, and he's running as a conservative Republican, and the Republican establishment and all of the, Christian groups here are backing.
Mr. Oganowski running in the fifth.
Yeah, Mr. Oganowski. Well, the Boston Globe endorsed him in the Republican primary, saying that Oganowski would allow gays and lesbians to serve in the military without "don't ask, don't tell" rules. He opposes gay marriage but favors civil unions. So this is the conservative guy that wants to change our military's rules to have homosexuals openly,
But can we talk about why that might be, Brian?
Oh, yeah, I called up his campaign and said, "Is this true?" And they go, "Yes, it is." And
he was also invited to interview on.
Yeah,
he's
invited to come on.
He can come on and talk.
Well,
about it.
You know, to me, it's a very sad thing. The left, not just the homosexual left, but the left in this country, they have a long-term political strategy. The Marxists did too, long-term. And so they take a defeat and they use it and they continue on their quest for victory, which for them will be homosexuals serving just without any restrictions in the military. Now, our side, we have this thing which was actually a defeat, don't ask, don't tell, because it was a regulation which allowed homosexuals to serve in the military, which is really against the military code of justice, which is against sodomy. But we had that thing, which, and many people said, okay, well, don't ask, don't tell. That's a good compromise. We'll take that. And then we just stopped doing anything. Well, the homosexuals didn't stop. They have a group called Servicemen's Legal Defense Network, SLDN. I don't know what the budget is. I'm sure it's over $1 million. They have a highly professional campaign, and they're pushing for the end of don't ask, don't tell. And so in a political void, when you have a political void, it's filled by who's doing the activism. Well, the problem is the homosexuals are doing the activism. Our side isn't doing squat. And so what do we expect? We get these guys who are being besieged by these homosexuals who are saying, let us serve openly in the military. Nice sounding message. They have all the fancy sound bites. And what happens is politicians start to cave because they're not hearing from our side.
Wow. You know, you're right, Pete. Our movement is in terrible shape. And I know, I don't know, it's a long discussion, I suppose.
Well, it's because we don't have enough people like you. You and Amy, you guys are fighters. You stand for the truth. You're principled. You would never consider taking an unprincipled position. But the problem is a lot of our guys, and I think we need to start with the conservative movement, Brian and Amy. You can't be a conservative and support homosexuality in any form. The idea of conserving, we're conserving the Judeo-Christian sexual ethic that has stood the test of time for centuries, for millennia. How can you call yourself a conservative and do anything at all that endorses homosexuality in any form?
Or allow the movement on that side to get the foot in the door, such as the Don't Ask, Don't Tell or civil unions, which is what we see, you know, conservatives all supposed conservatives all over the country doing. And even in this state here, that whole idea of allowing civil unions while banning gay marriages.
As you alluded to, Pete, I spoke to the Oganowski campaign, and they said, well, yeah, he allows civil unions as a sort of, I think he used the word compromise. And I said, well, I said to the guy, I said, well, if civil unions is legitimate, then why not let them get married? I mean, if it's legitimate for, you know, homosexual civil unions, what's the problem with marriage? Well, of course, he didn't have an answer to that.
So the side that's willing to compromise, which unfortunately has been the supposed conservatives, are the losers. If you compromise, you lose, because the other side is not compromising.
Well, and plus, we don't have enough pressure. You know, the homosexuals, you look at the history of the homosexual movement, they had ACT UP and Queer Nation, and these groups, which would just drive people nuts. And I think there's a calculation in a lot of people's minds, good people who should know better. But it's like, do I really want to get harassed by these guys? No, I don't want to be harassed by these gay activists. They're loud, they're obnoxious, they're a pain. I don't really want to deal with that, so I'm going to make a compromise. Meanwhile, the Christians and the conservatives, my goodness, they'll roll over like nothing. I mean, you look at what National Review is publishing on the homosexual issue. It's almost as if National Review is embarrassed to take anything close to a principled stand on the homosexual issue. You know, they're embarrassed about the religious right, so-called. They're embarrassed about people who would actually criticize the Cheneys for the fact that their daughter has become a symbol of homosexual parenting in this nation.
Well, so many of the people at NR are younger, and you have to wonder about, you know, how they have been brainwashed as part of that younger generation where anything goes.
And then, Amy, also the libertarian issue. You know, a libertarian, they face a duality here. The libertarians, they want to be, hey, anybody can do anything. I'm a libertarian. I have the freedom to do whatever I want, you know. On the other hand, they're against this state power. So on the latter side, no libertarian should be supporting any aspect of the homosexual agenda, because it all increases state power to harass us in our daily lives, to stop us from practicing and living out our faith. And yet a lot of libertarians are supporting various aspects of the homosexual agenda in the guise of freedom.
Right, yeah. Yeah, the whole libertarian philosophy is almost sophistry. It cannot possibly work. It's an intellectual invention. I don't think that it has ever taken place on Earth, and nor could it, because it flies in the face of how human nature really works. And I'm always very disappointed with people who consider themselves intellectual libertarians, because I don't think there's any such thing. But getting back to what you were saying, Pete, you know, you were absolutely correct. The other side, you know, one of the other aspects of this is the funding. There are no George Soroses in the conservative movement. People who are willing to say, I believe in a cause, I believe in a movement, and here's your money. Conservative donors are, they're horrible. They're afraid. They want their names on buildings. They want to support think tanks. They don't want to, you know, roll up their sleeves and actually help people get involved. And the ones that do are so eccentric and difficult to deal with. You know, that's another reason why we are where we are. The conservative groups that are rolling in money are the ones that are, you know, nice and put out, you know, stately pieces.
Well, let's hope that none of our bigger donors are listening to what you just said, Brian.
Well, there are some great exceptions. And I have some
they're not all eccentrics.
Yes. And you guys, but let's come back to the media, because the media is the enabler in all of this. There is no excuse, no possible excuse for what the media is doing on the homosexual issue. They are basically dictating that there is only one side of this issue. And what that does is that gives the homosexual activists a pass. We all know that I'm covering a thing now. The homosexualist agenda is just extremely radical. There's a case, an interesting case, where the Wayne Beeson, who's this nasty gay activist, is accusing Regina Griggs and PFOX, which is an ex-gay parents group. They're accusing them of lying because some ex-gay guy got punched at a homosexual activist hit him in the back at the state fair, and the guy did the Christian thing. He turned the other cheek. He didn't even want a police report on it. But PFOX put out a press release saying, "Hey, a hate crime was committed here. This guy was hit at this event." Well, these homosexual activists like Wayne Beeson and ex-gay watch, which is a group which is trying to discredit the idea that homosexuals can change, they started putting out these things saying, "We can't find verification of this hate crime. Regina Griggs and PFOX made it up," and they said all these awful things, and they even called for Regina Griggs to resign. Well, the fact is, this thing happened. There was no police report. That's why it was hard to verify. But I finally talked to a police spokesman yesterday, and yes, the thing happened, just as they said it happened. But Wayne Beeson and these radical homosexual activists wouldn't even be able to attempt this sort of nutty activism if there was actual media which would hold them accountable. But the media doesn't hold these guys accountable. The media only looks askance at us. They're always, you know, we're the ones who have to be watched, and is our viewpoint acceptable to be in media? Meanwhile, they're giving the gay activists a huge pass, which allows them to do all sorts of bad things without any repercussions.
Yeah, you're absolutely right, Pete. I've had that experience over and over again where I've said, why don't you ask them this question? You know, why don't you look at this that we know about them? Why don't you make them, respond? And yeah, they don't want to do it.
Can I give another example, you guys?
Okay, then we got to run.
Okay, Mayor Noggle in Fort Lauderdale is taking on this gross public sex that's happening all over, and of course the homosexual activists and the liberal media have pilloried this guy, just harangued him. Well, the National Gay and Lesbian Task Force actually called for a censure of Mayor Noggle. Well, the National Gay and Lesbian Task Force, if the press ever looked into what that group supports, there would be a huge story. They've worked with leather groups, sadomasochistic groups, I should say. They've worked with this Coalition for Sexual Freedom, which is this basically sexual anarchy movement, no restrictions at all.
They get a free pass everywhere.
Yeah, and so here the National Gay and Lesbian Task Force is extremely radical. They've done all sorts of crazy things, but there's no interest by the media in what their agenda is actually about.
Right. Well, Pete, thank you very much. As depressing as this is, people need to hear it. And, we'll keep up on this. So tell people how they can get in touch with Americans for Truth.
Yeah, our website is Americans for Truth, all written out, americansfortruth.org. And we have a banquet coming up October 5th. If anybody's in the Chicago area, Friday, October 5th, we got a banquet.
David Parker will be one of the speakers.
Yes.
Great. Okay, Pete, thank you very much. Peter LaBarber, Americans for Truth. This is Brian Kamiker, WRCA Radio, Mass Resistance. We'll be right back. And we're back. Brian Kamiker, Mass Resistance Radio, Radio Free Massachusetts, here on WRCA Radio. Well, coming up is the special election in the 5th Congressional District. We talked a little about that in our last segment, where the Republican running is Nikki Tsongas, the widow of Paul Tsongas, who served in that...
Democrat. She's the Democrat.
She's the Democrat. And that's the Democrat. The Republican is Jim Oganowski, who I mentioned in the Globe's endorsement to him. He said that he is a 20-year military veteran, and after all those 28 years, he's decided that gays and lesbians should serve in the military without "don't ask, don't tell" rules. So he wants to change the military to have homosexuals openly serve, and he opposes gay marriage, but he favors civil unions. And I mentioned that I called his campaign and asked them about that. I said, if civil unions is legitimate, why not let them get married? And they couldn't come up with an answer. This is very disappointing. When it came to voting for offices in the past, I've turned to the Constitution Party, which is a little bit more principled, I should say a lot more principled than the Republican Party is most of the time, unfortunately, or fortunately for them. And the Constitution Party has a candidate in this election, Pastor Kevin Thompson, and he's here with us. Kevin, thanks for coming on the radio show.
Well, thank you for having me on the program, and welcome back on the air.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you. How's the campaign going? I saw your name in Thursday's Boston or Wednesday's Boston Globe. So, you know, you're coming along.
Yeah, I'll tell you, things are taking off here. We're getting a lot of attention because our message is resounding with people. Our message of family values, our message of conservative principles does have an echoing effect here in Massachusetts. Believe it or not, there are more people who think like us than people give us credit for.
I find that myself. A lot of people are afraid to publicly talk about it. But, you know, you go outside of, you know, Cambridge and parts of Boston and, you know, Brookline and Newton where I live. Yeah, there's a lot of normal people around.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, of course, we're up in the 5th District running. And people in the 5th District, there is a voice for conservative principles. And they're finding out that, hey, you know, we don't have to be ashamed of ourselves. We don't have to fear and cower. We can stand up for what's right. We can stand up for what we believe in. And that's exactly what this campaign is all about.
That's great. Some of the issues, you know, that you have seem pretty pretty radical. I'm just joking, really. They're not radical at all. The acknowledgement of God. It was a Republican, and actually many Democrats, who have acknowledged God publicly over the years and said that we need to acknowledge God and put it on our coins and put it in the... but they seem to be backing away from that.
Right. Even 6 years ago yesterday, we had the entire Congress standing out in front of the Capitol steps singing God Bless America.
Right.
And now we're trying to remove all mentions of God and any sort of religious heritage that we've had that our founding fathers were not ashamed to pronounce.
Right. And, you know, the idea of the right to life, it's a lot of people don't realize that Ted Kennedy and John Kerry were both pro-life at one point in their careers. And
maybe that's because they were at one time really Catholic.
There's that possibility.
Right. But then the Potomac fever set in, and the pressure from others came in.
And you know, limited government. You know, the Republicans have been terrible on that. I never thought the Republicans could do worse than the Democrats did under Bill Clinton, but unfortunately they did. And I think that in 2006. America reacted to that by basically throwing them out. And I don't think the Republicans get it now.
They haven't quite got the idea that they've left their principles, and now they've got nowhere to stand, and now they don't even have a constituency in which to represent.
Right. And, you know, there's the family. You know, we've talked about this on our show, the attacks on the traditional family. Immigration, the war in Iraq, gun control, and American sovereignty is an issue that a lot of people don't want to talk about. That, you know, all of these things coming, you know, the NAFTA superhighway, which apparently, you know, there's this movement to let Mexican goods, that many of them originally come from China and other places, come into the United States and just have this highway through the United States and Canada without, you know, customs or normal American, you know, laws that govern that.
Right. And people don't realize that affects our national security, that affects our immigration problem, that affects our economy in general.
Right.
And I was talking with, I can't remember their names, a few Democratic operatives here in the state, in the green room before I was on my New England Cable News interview. And we're talking about this issue of American sovereignty. They had no concept of what that was. They honestly thought, well, there are people fighting for this, really.
Mm-hmm.
And it blows my mind that people don't realize this is a very serious issue that really it puts in jeopardy our freedom. It puts in jeopardy our sovereignty as a nation.
Right.
And it needs to be addressed and it needs to be fought for. And there's only one candidate that's so far, me, that's fighting for that.
Right.
No one else has had the bravery to stand up and say, this is wrong, we need to put a stop to this.
Right. You know, and I'm very disappointed that, you know, as I mentioned earlier, that, you know, Oganowski, Republican, 28 years of military experience, wants to come from Massachusetts and change the laws you know, to push homosexuality more than the Republicans and Democrats are already willing to do. He wants to be the vanguard and to push civil unions. What is going on here? And of course, you know, the military, you know, as we've talked about from time to time, has become feminized and made crazy anyway.
It's not a place for social experimentation. You know,
no.
We wonder why, one of the reasons why we're doing so terribly in Iraq, well, when you've, exactly what you just said, feminized our army, well, what do you expect? Now, first, I believe we shouldn't have been there in the first place, so let me clear that up. But our effectiveness as a military might is being affected here.
Right.
And no one's realizing this.
Yeah. And then, you know, gun control is another, you know, I recently took the goal course, and we're going to talk about that probably next time. You don't realize how horrible it is to just want to own a gun and have it in your house. And
you mean how difficult it is to comply with the Massachusetts laws?
Yeah.
It's a good thing to own a gun.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. Just wanted to be sure we got that straight.
Right, yeah. And it's so difficult. And we have to have people in Congress that get it. And too many people just don't get it.
And Amy, you're exactly right. People are looking down. Gun ownership is a good thing. It was expected of us once as a nation. But now, you know, you even talk about owning a gun, and people look at you as a lunatic. People
at
look
least
at you
in
as
Massachusetts.
Sort of crazy. Yeah.
Right, right.
It's incredible.
Right. So what do you find that people are talking about most in the district? What issues?
Well, I'll tell you what. There are two things that I find once people understand who I am and what I'm about, the two issues that most resonate are, one, taxes. There's not a person alive who thinks that we're paying enough, paying our fair share of taxes. In other words, we need to reduce that. We're paying over what we should be. And second, the idea of family values, the idea that the traditional family needs to be protected and preserved from the attack of the homosexual movement, from the attack of social progressives, from the attack of even our public schools. The family needs to be preserved, and that's what people are talking about. Unfortunately, the politicians in this race aren't talking about that. But there again, these messages do resonate.
That's
and
interesting.
People support this. If they just had a candidate they knew would stand up for this.
And right.
That's why I'm running.
The media certainly doesn't talk about it.
No, it doesn't.
So those are the things. What in particular on the in other words, tell me about your experiences in you know, with people on this, on the campaign trail, and, you know, just the makeup of the 5th District. You know, people think of Massachusetts as completely whacked, and much
right.
of it is, but the 5th District has been very conservative over the years. They,
right.
they let Marty Meehan somehow. okay, when is the election, Kevin?
Our election is October 16th.
October 16th.
That's the general election.
In the 5th District.
Right.
How can people get in touch with your campaign?
The best way is to go to the website, www.thompson07.com. On there you can find the phone number to our campaign office,
which is 978-877-5703.
Or you can also email me directly, kevin@thompson07.com. Drop me an email, let me know. We could always use more help from people, and just to get the message out that there's a candidate you can actually vote for in this election.
Kevin, thank you very much for coming on the show. I really appreciate it.
Thank you for having me on the program.
Best of luck. All right, this is Brian Kamenker, Mass Resistance Radio. We'll be right back. And we're back for our quick final segment. Ladies and gentlemen, if you think that getting this information out is important, well, we need your help too. To keep this flow of information moving, we need your financial support. We don't get support from government, from big rich conservatives, from corporations. You can help by sending a check to Mass Resistance Radio. That's Mass Resistance Radio, P.O. Box 1612, Waltham, Massachusetts, 02454, P.O. Box 1612, Waltham, 02454, or go to massresistance.org, hit donate. You can donate by credit card at massresistance.org. Okay, ladies and gentlemen, this is Brian Kamenker. Until next week, we'll talk to you then.